Welcome to Deep Dive, Wine Acoustics, Episode 3, Beaujolais. Hello, I'm Andy Tarnoff, the host of Deep Dive, the founder of On Milwaukee, and I'm joined by my co-host, Courtney Taylor Taylor, lead singer of the Dandy Warhols, and now proving himself in Episode 3 to be a wine expert. Ready to drink some more wine today, Courtney?
I'm ready.
You picked this one. This is one that you're not actually like, you wouldn't call yourself an expert on Beaujolais, right?
Absolutely not. I had to Google it and, get into Wiki and find out some things about it. Yeah, it's Gamay, and that's a light grape, very similar to Pinot Noir, and I'm not a Pinot Noir drinker either. So I did have a great experience with Beaujolais recently, which is what made me think that we should probably get one. I was on tour and a stack of designer pizza ended up in the tour bus after the show, as they often do. And it was really good pizza. I had a bite of one slice and wow, that's great. And then I picked up the bottle of whatever was our backstage wine that had made it onto the bus. It migrated through crew or band members, whoever. And it was Beaujolais, Louis Jadot Beaujolais. And I said, I don't really drink this. And Brent said, Taylor's, I think you should try this. I mean, it's pretty good wine. So I did. And it was pretty good wine. Like, it was.
Okay.
So I don't remember if it was Beaujolais Village or not, but I know that and generally in that Loire, Rhone area, if the word village is next to it, it's slightly better than if it's not.
And so village is something we're going for, which in this case, this one's a village.
Yep, Beaujolais Village. And it's generally a bright, fresh, zingy, fun, sunny day wine. It says in Wikipedia it is often paired with salad. And that is strange for a red wine.
Well, we're pairing it with crackers today. Or at least I'm pairing it with crackers today.
I'm pairing it with crackers. Did you manage to score any Delice de Bourgogne?
I don't know if there's like a cheese shortage going on in Milwaukee right now, which seems impossible, but I couldn't find that one. So we're going to do extra prep next time and I'll make sure.
Okay. So you have no cheese. You're going crackers.
I got the cheese from the last episode, but I don't know if you want me to use the same cheese.
I don't know if a dark, Spanish cheese is going to make any sense. Okay. I would go Cracker Commando if I was you.
Just Cracker Commando it is.
Okay.
You said that wine just showed up on your tour bus and backstage. Do the Dandy Warhols have some sort of like rider, you know, in your contracts where you're like, we want these
absolutely,
bottles?
Yeah, we need one bottle of white Burgundy, which are, you know, Mekong Village was what we get, Puy Fossé, you know, any of those great, not too expensive, but wonderful, great drinkers, white Burgundies, my favorite of all white wines. And then generally two bottles of Bordeaux.
Okay. So the rider's a real thing and you guys do it, but this was not on the rider. This just sort of somehow showed up.
I don't know how a Beaujolais snuck in.
But you're glad it did.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah. And I think we're about to be glad.
Okay.
In this moment.
In our last episode, it took a good 45 minutes for our wine to reach its maturity in the glass. Is it going to be the same sort of thing? Zenith, right. Is that going to be the same sort of thing with this wine, or is this like a faster drinking?
You got me. I would guess that it's meant to pop and pour.
Let's do it, man.
Okay. Here we go. You still got your grandma's antique.
I do. I just still don't really know how to use it. We'll have to have a separate
separate lesson.
Episode on that. Yeah.
Okay. And you have the foiler. Foiler alert.
I do.
Foiler.
I got the foiler, but I got it off on my own.
Okay. Yeah. If it's too tight to just yank it off on these classic Somkey, I can't say enough about them.
Yeah.
Generally has a little tiny blade on there that's serrated edge, is not sharp or anything, but that'll definitely get the foil off enough to get the cork out. So
you're using your phone. I'm using my computer. Do you see me during this, or are you like flying blind?
No, I see you.
Oh, okay. I was like, because that would be some impressive stagecraft.
Well, you know, I'm actually blind in the center of my vision. I have a rare and almost uniquely Norwegian form of macular degeneration called Stargardt's disease. So I've been going blind since I was about 25 years old, and didn't know it until I was sitting at a bar, as you do, on tour with the gang, having lunch, watching some games on above the bottles. And I said, "What's the score?" And Fatty turned to me and just went, "You can't see that?" And I just went, "Oh, no." And so I went in, and KCI Institute at OHSU was very good, and did all the tests. And yeah, you have Stargardt's disease, we suspect. But your brain doesn't let you just be blind. It isn't a white, It isn't a white spot, you know, in both eyes, because they're identically going blind. Like literally the retina is dying from the inside out. So your brain somewhere in the transfer of information starts to throw in random colors from around it. Like, it'll be fine. We'll get through this. You know, just this looks like that. Who cares what the
just
difference
filling
is?
Filling it in. Okay.
Yeah. That's what your brain thinks. Which means that summertime is brutal on my toes. I am kicking, bumping, scraping. It's brutal. Actually, a lot of funny, you know, you wouldn't think, but being blind is brutal.
I would think it would be very brutal. Are you kidding me? That sounds awful.
Okay, that was a joke.
Okay, because
another little blind guy joke for you.
Is this going to stop, or are you going to lose your vision completely?
I'm in a race against digital retina replacement. There's only one Norwegian in my ancestry, and I am told it is an almost uniquely Norwegian, disability.
You're Dutch, right? Both you and
one. My mom's side were the Meiskens.
Okay.
They lived in the Terskelling Lighthouse since the 1200s, and I just saw on Wiki in the Nederlandish language recently that the last Meiskens born in the Terskelling Lighthouse has recently passed away. The elderly, very elderly lady who would be a remote cousin of mine.
So we're going to toast with some Dutch wine someday if such a thing exists.
Yep. I don't know if it exists. Wow, this is a good dark color. This might be the very same wine I had in Ventura, California with some fancy as pizza. Okay, let's give it a swirl. Are you in your glass?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have the deep funk of the Cubillo from the last episode.
Exactly.
It's a lot, you know, the French have a more refined and restrained style. Even Beaujolais, which is kind of their fun party wine.
I like that we've had two fun party wines in a row.
Almost all wine in my mind is fun party wine.
I mean, I guess if you're drinking it when you're sad, you're doing it wrong. But
yeah, well, you're not sad for long,
right?
In Movable Feast, Ernest Hemingway has this great passage where he says, "I was depressed, I was miserable, I couldn't write. I went to the Café des Artistes." And I sat and I ate oysters and I drank the white wine of Bordeaux. And as I did this, the metallic tastes of the two things sort of became one flavor, and I started to really enjoy it, and I felt better, and then I started to feel good, and then I started to make plans. And I thought that was so brilliant because it really tells you that the opposite of depression isn't happiness, it's making plans. That's when you're
real happy.
It's kind of like
what we did after Summerfest at Good Kind. We drank a bunch of wine and we made some plans.
We got happy, then we got happier, then we made plans.
All right, can we taste it? Ready? Mm-hmm.
There is a, if you peel the bark off of a young tree and bite on the unbarked branch, that's going on in here, right?
Yeah. I was going to say pencil lead.
Is it? Is it tasting like it, or is it smelling like it to you?
Not in a bad way. Just, I don't know what that, I don't know what that note, yeah, note is called.
It's funny that you should say pencil lead, because I'm getting more the whole experience of sharpening a pencil. I'm getting the wood and maybe some of the graphite as well.
Maybe if you just chomped on a pencil. You want to hear the description of this wine?
Oh, I love this game.
Yeah. You want to write your own description, or should I just tell you what it is?
And I'm curious if this is 100% Gamay. This is what Gamay tastes like. It is tangy. It's very tangy.
It is. And it, before I even read it, I don't taste that same.
It was like clove or.
Yeah. But it started out like it didn't start out tasting the way it finished. And this one tastes.
Yeah, this does not have the earthy warmth of Spanish wine.
Right. The other one tasted really acidic in the first couple sips.
I would say from the neck up, this one tastes very similar to that Spanish wine. But I don't think that tangy, metallic ting is going to go away with this one. I think that is the nature of this wine. And I think I remember that also, that it had a good, smooth balance to it, even by the time I got on the bus and tasted it, which was near the end of the bottle. But it never loses that tingy, tangy thing.
Okay. All right. Here's the description. This crisp, fruit-forward, juicy wine has expressive aromas and flavors of ripe red berries with nice weight in the mouth, pairing with grilled white meat. That's not much of a description.
I think it's fine. I think it's a modest description. They're not in love with their wine describing skills, and I respect that.
Ripe red berries. So ripe red berry would be like a strawberry or raspberry or.
Yeah, I would say I kind of get raspberry. I thought raspberry, I've always kind of suspected that raspberry was a code word for cheap.
Well, speaking of cheap, I don't know what you paid for this one.
Weighing in at $22.
Oh, mine was $14.
Holy moly. And we got the same year and everything. You went to your friend's wine.
Yeah, I went to Ray's Wine and Spirits.
Yeah, who's your buddy. Your buddy's with Ray.
But I don't think he discounted it. I think that's just what it costs. I don't know.
Well, I'm getting
newer.
I'm getting rinsed.
Well, those Pacific Northwest prices, man, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Totally. It's got so much farther to go to get to Oregon than Wisconsin.
That's true.
I'm gonna do some very creamy French cheese, soft. It's called Delice de Bourgogne. This particular part of a wheel is starting to go off. I just bought it, but I think I should have reached to the back of the thing and bought the new ones.
Okay.
As this one has got a little bit of that formaldehyde-y thing, that wonderful French soft cheeses start to do when they age. Also, like kind of like if you ever sat down to lobster in an empty lobster restaurant and went, whoa, are you embalming this or are you cooking this?
It's good. I like that. While you're eating your cheese, I'll tell you the official rating from a guy named Wilfred Wong. Have you heard of Wilfred Wong? I have not. But he gave it a 90.
I also have Little Tomatoes, which is as close as I'm going to get to salad on this show right now. And did I mention that it says on Wikipedia that it's often paired with salad? Well,
yeah.
This is my salad. Here we go. Wait, let me do it with just the cheese first.
Okay.
It's about the same. but it's also had a minute to soften up, and it is a better wine than it was right when, you know, 3 minutes ago or whatever. Okay, here we go.
Okay, eat it with the tomato.
Yes, vegetation with Beaujolais. That is a sweet and lovely tomato. Really reminds me that it's a berry, not a vegetable.
That's true.
That does not make the wine taste better. It make the cheese, the white cheese, soft cheese. It's like triple cream brie is what
okay.
this is what this cheese is. And it really, a lot of cheeses, like if you start to get into the Teutonic cheeses like Gruyere and cheddar,
love Gruyere,
things like
yeah.
that, you know, the rubbery yeah. semi-firm cheeses or firm cheeses, they tend to be fruity and a bit tangy in themselves, and they tend to bring out tangy notes in more serious wines, darker wines like Bordeaux. They bring out tanginess in the wine, so I don't generally order cheese and a Bordeaux together, or Cab Sauvs in general.
You know, maybe it's just because I live in Wisconsin, although to my credit, I have lived in other places as well. But I love fondue in the winter. I love a good fondue party. It feels very 70s. But what kind of wine would you drink with that kind of Swiss, baby Swiss, Gruyere, Emmental?
I would drink white Burgundy.
You speak very highly of white Burgundy.
I think it's the best white wine ever invented. Most of them, anything over a certain price point is going to be great. And then they have the $100 white Burgundies like Meursault that are stunning. And that is, there is a saline inland seabed nature to particularly Meursault that goes so well with seafood. I would any of the great white wines of Europe, I mean the Germans and the Alsatian French, which means they're basically half German, half
right.
French back
right.
and forth for hundreds of years. You know, they make just the most amazing Rieslings, really bright, crisp, you know, the bracing acidity, as they say in the business.
I would think that you would find Rieslings to be too sweet based on what I've heard you describe as your aversion toward these fruit bombs.
They make them in a bunch of classifications, and Trockenbaren, Auslese, Baron Auslese, all these different things.
Okay.
And I haven't quite figured them out because I'm pretty sure that 9 out of 10 of them are sweet. And
yeah.
that means dessert, I guess.
I always thought so.
So, yeah, I have to be assured by whoever is selling me a German bottle of Riesling that it is bone dry. And then I have to go as dry as an Alsatian Riesling. And if they go, well, not quite that dry, I go, never mind.
Pass.
I'm not getting it. I'm getting the Alsatian. Do you have an Alsatian? Yeah.
I got to try to drop that just in casual conversation when someone refers to something as dry. Is it
yeah.
as dry as an Alsatian?
Yeah.
Riesling?
Like a German sense of humor.
Right.
Like an
right.
English, like an English
yeah.
sense of humor.
Yeah. It's very Monty Python, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Wilfred Wong gave this a 90.
Wilfred Wong, you say?
I don't know who he is.
I have no idea who Wilfred Wong is, but if I think about it, after this, I'm gonna look him up. But I don't really need to know any more wine tasters.
Right. Again, it's what you like and what you don't like. And
yeah, and I've got it kind of worked out, you know, me, James Suckling, young Robert Parker,
mm-hmm.
Jeb Dunnick, Jancis Robinson. These are my players. And this is who I go to and have been looking at what they think. And they contradict each other openly. It is pretty silly. But if they all tend to like a wine, I'll buy it. I'll sight unseen buy the wine. Jeb and and Suckling, if both of them like it, I think I can get the same result.
Just finished this glass and I tasted some sediment in the bottom. Is that unusual for a wine this new?
Really? That is pretty weird, because I thought that was just, you know, I'm just learning too, although I've tasted many, many, you know, I don't know how many, a thousand, couple thousand, few thousand, several thousand bottles of wine. I was under the impression and have been told that sediment is generally the acid finding other bits of acid clinging together and making a chunky piece of acid that falls to the bottom of the bottle, collects in the punt, which is that hole in there that they invented, who knows, 1,000 years ago, maybe 250 years ago. I don't know. But okay, that is so that the sediment will sit around the bottom. And then when you pour it, it doesn't glug up in that circular.
That makes sense. I don't know.
It's brilliant. I love ancient technology. And theoretically, if what I was told is right, then that there shouldn't be any sediment in this, unless it is, you know, just bits of grape skin.
Okay. You're right. The grape is 100% Gamay.
Okay. Gamay Noir.
Plump wine with notes of strawberry, black cherry, and spice, pairing with hors d'oeuvres, mild cheeses, or poultry dishes.
I'm not, say it again, spices. I'm not getting spices here, though. Are you?
Me neither. No. All right, I got to pay attention.
God, I really like the nose, though.
I mean, I think it smells better than it tastes, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not what I thought it was going to be, and either was the previous Beaujolais that I had that was, I believe, not a village. So the word village at the end, you know, means that these villages have been rated as making greater wine, a higher level of wine, than the other villages in the region.
Yeah.
So in the entire region of Beaujolais, you have Beaujolais, then you have Beaujolais Village, which is a number of, you know, maybe 25 or 30 of the top. And then you have Cru, C-R-U, Cru Beaujolais, Cru wines. And that's got to be a smaller handful of villages that got the Cru rating. And I didn't see anything like Grand Cru. Like if you get into Burgundy, there's Grand Cru, there's Premier Cru. In Bordeaux, there's, you know, one ER Cru. There's two, you know, there's different right. Crus. There's Cru Bourgeois, which is sort of either the top of the bottom or the bottom of the top, depending on which way you want to look at it. We'll get into that because we're going to drink one of those in an upcoming episode.
Okay.
Because that is a great pair of words to look for. Cru Bourgeois, when you want to get a Bordeaux, you're having a nice steak or lamb thing, it's the bomb. You look for Cru Bourgeois and you can spend the kind of money that we're basing this show around and blow minds, including your own.
I think if I really, really had to assign a flavor, I guess I kind of taste strawberry a little bit.
I'm starting to think strawberry.
But I also don't know if that's like just being implanted in my brain because I read the description.
I'm getting it. There's a little plummy. There's a little plum, but I think in wine speak, plum implies a base note that is not happening here.
It's very different than what we had before. This does not taste like Spanish wine. This is what I'm here to learn. Is it not all wine tastes the same?
Yeah.
So, 3 episodes in, we're off to a good start.
Cracker,
cheese,
and tomato. Basically, all I need is bacon, right?
Yeah, it's a little BLT.
I wonder if this would be great with bacon. Would this wine be great with bacon?
I think most things are great with bacon, but
Coca-Cola, Coke on ice.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about, because we've been talking a lot about grapes and how these how wildfires in the world are influencing grapes, their flavor profiles. It's changing anything?
I've only had one, and it was recently, and it was not in Oregon or California. I had a 2017 fire damage, smoke damaged wine, because there were some intrepid souls who just went, F it, we're making wine out of this. And it was, you know, vaguely smoky. I don't remember liking it, but I don't remember disliking it or saying, I'm not drinking this, it's gross, or anything like that.
It's got to think that's going to be a bigger thing. I mean,
but you're talking about over the overall, is
the
it
globe,
flavor of wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you heard anything about that?
I can't really tell.
Okay. All right. That could be a good viewers, listeners, chime in if you have any opinions on that one. So I'd like to know. Well, the question I had for you, and we could probably devote an entire episode to this, so I just want to touch on this, is like the concept of storing wine. You gave me some very specific directions about the temperature in which to keep these bottles, to keep them vertical. Some people make their own cellars. You have your own cellar.
Yeah, I've got two.
One for
whites, which is basically a wine closet. And then I've got a proper walk-in cellar for the reds.
You think that you have to hit a certain level of wine enthusiasm before you start making your own cellar? Or do you recommend that people have a specific place?
Or you
place?
Have to hit a certain tax bracket.
Right. Yeah, you're probably not storing a bunch of $14 bottles of Beaujolais. Maybe you are.
I'm not.
Does it make sense? It only makes sense once you're buying more expensive wines in volume, or else you should just go to the wine store.
Or just in volume, you know, when you have a lot of wine, you've got to store it somewhere. And at some point, if you have a good, strong, obsessive compulsive disorder, then...
Right.
You need to move beyond the wine fridge, you know, the
right.
Like my brother, he needs to move beyond. I think he's got three wine refrigerators next to each other.
Yeah, just move on to the cellar at that point.
Just build it, you know.
Yeah.
What framing, sheetrocking, you don't need to plumb anything in. You can wire up one outlet. Yeah. It turns out it's very easy. I mean, I had mine, you know, we dressed it out in fake stone and stained the walls dark brown. So it's, you know, it's a medieval wine cellar. My wine cellar.
That tracks. That's very, that's pretty Courtney Taylor.
Medieval times call for medieval measures. Yeah.
Well, I would love it.
I would like to try it with a salad. More on the heavy olive oil than vinegar side, maybe with a balsamico. I think it has some balsamic nature to it.
Hmm.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, though, it is not a compelling wine.
It tastes like wine.
Like the most minimal wine. Yeah. I was a Dungeons and Dragons playing nerd. In the middle of your character profile is neutral. There's neutral good, there's neutral evil, there's chaos, and there's law. And I would say this is pretty close to neutral. Pretty close to perfectly neutral.
It's not offensive. It's not offensive at all. I don't dislike it.
No.
But I thought our last wine was like kind of special, and this one, I'm not complaining about it. It just tastes like wine.
Yeah. I'm now understanding why I've always blown off Beaujolais.
Maybe. So you talked about time and place and how it evokes a memory. Maybe you were just in a great mood after that show. Maybe the pizza was awesome. Maybe you're already drunk. I mean, maybe your memory of it is better than what it really was.
Yeah, maybe 2020 was a better year than 2022. I have no idea. But yeah, it could be the high of, I just walked off stage and it was a great gig. the pizza was busy, busy, busy. Gorgeous, oily, rich, mildly spicy, meaty, tangy, cheesy. Yeah, I would, if I wasn't just having crackers and a very, very creamy mild cheese with this, if there was some meat, I would probably be a lot more excited and just like, whoa, I can drink a lot of this.
I still think I could drink a lot of it. Just to, I take your challenge, Courtney.
Yeah, right time and place.
Speaking of the last high, I'd be remiss if I didn't weave, as this is a wine acoustics podcast, just a little bit of music stuff. And today, other than forcing you to play guitar for me, I wanted to talk about vocal range and timbre.
Okay.
Because I don't want to make it seem like you're just a guitar player, you're a singer, you're a songwriter.
Yes, and I hack my way through both.
Well, offline yesterday, you said to me that we have different tonalities to our voice, which is true. You have a very low speaking voice, and sometimes as I get excited, mine gets higher, which I wish it didn't. But in listening to the Dandy Warhols, sometimes you sing really low, and sometimes you sing really high, and sometimes you sing in the middle. And I came up with three examples of this. Last High, Get Off, and We Used to Be Friends.
Okay.
I'm interested to know, as a singer who has a naturally low voice, do you have to put your voice in a different place or jump into falsetto, or like, you wouldn't seem like the kind of singer who could sing high, but you can.
Well, I was never a singer, so I had to just find ways to sing that I could make the song cooler. A lot of times you have a piece of music and that you buy a record and you put it on, and the song you don't know, or one of the songs you don't know, comes on and you go, this is cool. And then the person starts singing and that song is not cool anymore. And I just wanted to stay out of the way of the music. And early, that falsetto, that really high kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
that was a good way for me to stay out of the way of the music. And the other way for me to stay out of the way of the music was really low, you know, in my
right.
good morning.
But that's your natural tone. I mean, falsetto, if you're not careful about it, not everyone can sound like Barry Gibb while doing falsetto. I mean, it can sound ridiculous.
I don't sound like Barry Gibb. Those Gibb brothers were great at it. I'm a hack at it, but it does stay out of the way, and it's cool. It sounds, I like it, you know. And if I double track my voice or triple track it, get Brent on there to harmonize with it, I love that sound. It works great. The hardest part was the middle, like Boys Better and that kind of thing. Those were the ones that I just put my head in my hands and it just spiraled into a depressing, you know, head hanging, tail between my legs, walking out of the studio. I'm a failure and this is never going to work. I need a real singer. I should have waited and tried out more people. Although in, you know, 93 in Portland, Oregon, there slim pickings for singers. So I had to do it myself, you know, because I'm a drummer. That's what I do. That's what I am in my soul to this day. I was in marching band. I was in drum corps. I was in symphonies. Peter and I met at a symphonic music camp when we were maybe 14 and 15.
I'm not sure I knew this. So drumming was your first instrument?
Yeah. That's... Yeah. And Peter was
like Dave Grohl. Like, I mean, you're a pretty good guitar player. That's
Iggy Pop, Steven Tyler. Yeah, lots of us migrated. I think being a drummer, you understand simplicity and the power of simplicity, and you don't get nervous about the same thing for 45 seconds.
Okay.
You understand the power of hypnotic repetition. And I think that's why at least, you know, a good chunk of us are successful moving, making that move.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned double tracking and triple tracking, and I was actually going to ask you about that, because in Get Off, you're singing both high and low at this. I'm assuming that's both tracks are you.
Yes.
Those are both you, right?
I am singing high and low at the same time.
I mean, not at the same time, but, you know, double tracking it, and you get it out like a Mongolian mouth,
singing.
Right. That's not what I'm saying. But that's one of those instances where both sides of your vocal range come out.
I didn't like either one by itself. It didn't do to the recording what needed to be done to the recording.
I think it has a very Dandy Warhol sound. I mean, it's not the first time that you guys have done that, or the last time, and it's just the balance between high and low is kind of cool, especially because it's not two different people, in my
right.
opinion.
Although it's great when we do it live, because Brent sings the low part, and because we're, you know, cousins, our voices are similar, particularly when he sings low. When he sings mid-range or high, it becomes very clear that we're not the same guy. But for live, it's a great sound. I can back off the mic. I have a bullet mic. It has a little distortion on it, some echo. I can back off of that, and I can just blast. Just almost screaming. You know, basically yelling. And then he does the low and doubles that melody, and it's a beautiful, thick, and slightly searing experience.
Again, public service announcement here. If you have not seen the Dandy Warhols live and you've only heard their albums, you're missing out. It's my happy place. So it's good to hear the stories behind these things.
We got pretty good at that thing over 30 years. Well, I would like to say that this, what I was saying about the green chewing on a green tree branch. The getting through the bark and into the, this is really happening right now. That is what I'm having. And I just bought a case of white wine from a area called Salon in France. And that wine does the same thing. So this is doing a lot of what white wines do that I've had.
I'm starting to like it less.
I'm liking it less as well, yeah.
Like, now it's like sour-ish to me. I don't know. I'm talking out my ass here, but as a novice, like, kind of tastes like after you eat a bunch of Sour Patch Kids, like, how your mouth is sort of like, I don't know.
Yeah. But not
Don't hire me to write wine descriptions.
But right. Well, hard to say. You can't be bought, I guess,
Notes of old Sour Patch Kids pencils.
Yeah. It is like Sour Patch
tree
Kids,
bark.
But only 25 minutes after, if you haven't had anything else, you're riding your bike. You have nothing else except the old taste of Sour Patch Kids. Yeah, it has that. It's got that green tree branch thing that is very common in affordable, fun summer white wines from, you know, mid or southern France.
Well, we're not shitting all over this. At least I'm not. I'm just saying.
We can, if you want.
Yes.
I'm also not enjoying the high. The drug itself is not nearly as fun as a Spanish rager.
You know, you're right. I was in a great mood after our last episode and three glasses of that stuff. I felt silly. I didn't feel terrible the next day.
I'm tired.
Yeah. this is not, maybe this is a good sign to wrap this thing up. What do you want to try on episode?
This is making me, I need some water. Thank God. Yeah. Yesterday, I didn't want to drink this shit for all the
that shit.
In China.
We're going to come back to that joke. That's a callback to Brent, to Fathead referring to wine as sure water is shit. Don't drink that shit.
Yeah, when you're drinking wine, man, I don't want to drink that shit.
I don't drink that shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, dude, this is, when you watch us back to edit it, you're gonna see us just go.
Yeah, just, that's a good sign. Oh, right, let's leave on a high note. Let's find the last high.
What? No, I thought we were just gonna get real funny about depression and Beaujolais.
All right, then I have one more.
Can you imagine getting to this, you know, this region, and just like how the roofs have fallen in?
This city sucks. Just
grim, just miserable, just this wandering place, around.
If this you, town you know, sucks.
Car, you drive by, they don't recognize your car.
A broken Citroen or something.
Oh God! Everywhere, tons. The thatch roof cottages, just broken down. Hands on the floor. It's just medieval there. It's still the Black Plague. Their bodies piled up in between.
Qu'est-ce que c'est merde?
Corpses.
World War I trenches. I don't know.
Absolutely.
What are we drinking for our next wine? Let's leave this on a high note.
I would also. I do want to do this one thing though. We'll do this later. When I mentioned Cru Beaujolais, I have had one of those villages is called Morgon, and I remember that being something I really liked.
Okay.
So, but if it just has the word Beaujolais on it, you know, make sure there's no loaded guns, there's no razor blades, and you have a phone ready to dial 911.
Or whatever that number is in France. It's probably not 911. Yeah. Nif.
De.
Nifons. Nifons.
De. Be. De. Toi. De.
We can't find some humor in it, Courtney.
I'm really trying.
Just wasted 14 bucks.
The minute we decided it was a depressing wine, I got really excited about the comedy goldmine that might reveal.
It doesn't feel like a party wine.
God, I or think sad, you have sad to have party. A lot of sun. Maybe it's to calm you the fudge down when the sun is blazing. Everyone's getting weird. People are getting all high up on French summer in those lovely.
C'est possible.
Oh man, and so, you know, you need to calm down. Here, yeah, is Beaujolais Village,
and it's kind of just giving me a headache.
Down, and you'll calm down. Calm down. You will calm down now.
I hope there aren't any. Actually, I do hope there's some French viewers to our podcast.
Well, it would be really funny if they went exactement.
Exactement.
We're d'accord.
Yeah, we think the same thing. What do you want to drink next?
I don't know. I think we'll. You know, and this is something that people can do at home too with their friends, that they know that live now in other places. Is you can, you know, what we're gonna do is, you know, we just all go to the store and I will look at a grocery store that has a lot of, you know, big production wines. I'm thinking Nebbiolo from the northwest corner of Italy, which was conquered by Napoleon and the French. It's that region is actually called Piedmont, obviously French. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is a great, arguably the best region for food and wine in the world because it is Italian, heavily influenced by French. Also, it's near the mountains. And it's
is that where Turin is? Torino? Is that
yep.
where that is?
Yep.
Is that the Piedmont?
Yeah. It's near the coast and the mountains. So you can get like lamb and octopus in the same dish. You know, there's a tuna cream kind of tuna schmear that they put on slabs of pork. And it's incredible. People don't really surf and turf and let it touch on the plate, you know, much less cook it together or, you know, do anything with it together. So, that might be something we want to explore the food side of it, see if there's something simple.
Yeah, we're going to do better than just crackers for the next one.
Tonnado is what that's called.
Okay.
The tone. Tuna tone. And we can, and we can get some great just Nebbiolo. That's like the low everyday drinker, like the Crianza of northwestern Italy, also known as the Langa, the land. And I find that such a deep and powerful thing to say, to call it the Langa.
Okay.
The land. Jeez, that's so heavy. Beautiful poet.
We're going to give this one a... I'm not giving this one a 90. I'm giving this a...
he gave it a 93, but about halfway through the bottle.
It dropped down to a 75. I don't know.
Yeah, and then...
how low do they go? It's the lowest.
And then the next day, he was like...
14.
Fine. Actually, it's fine. It's 90. Fine. Yeah, I think these people probably do get paid... You know, surely there's got to be some payola in the wine.
Yeah, Wilfred Wong, 90 my ass. Who, if that is your real name, Wilfred.
Right.
We're just going to get ourselves in trouble here.
Oh, my God.
I'm calling it. We're
going to get our asses sued.
We're at 50 minutes, right, so that seems like, yeah, I got to take a little more of this and just a little.
Fun.
All right, Courtney.
It's still summer.
It's still summer.
Let's get outside.
And subscribe this video, people. Keep us going.
Better subscribe quick because we are out of here.
We're out of here.
All right.
Thanks. See you next time. Bye.
Sweet.